So this is Roger Molina on Creative Disturbance. I am delighted today to be with Jacob and Kason Hunwick. I can't read my own writing here, who just have jointly done a presentation in our watering hole about some of the trouble they're making today. So I'll let them introduce themselves and explain what they're working on and the narrative that goes with it.
Hi, so I'm Kason Hunwick. I'm part of this twin duo. And
You're a twin. I guess I didn't mention that.
Yeah, so we're identical twins. And we're both sophomores in college. And I go to UT Austin, and I'm a chemistry major. And
My name's Jacob Hunwick. I'm his twin brother. So I work with Roger in the ArtSci Lab as a junior designer. And I'm a major in A-Tech. I'm also a sophomore.
Okay, so it took you 19 years to live in a different place. And one of the things I think you told us was this was the first time you'd spent more than 12 hours away from each other in 19 years. So what happened?
Right. So, you know, obviously growing up, we were very close. And our relationship as twins kind of enabled us to sort of adopt this very interesting collaborative relationship. And so it kind of built this very unusual and inventive childhood where we sort of, you know, questioned the world around us, and we were actually able to, you know, create interesting projects and inventions. Like, for example, we noticed that when whoever started a ping pong match between us had an unfair advantage. So we made a little robot that launched the ball and made it fair.
So moving into college, that was kind of the first time we were ever apart for more than, like Roger said, 12 hours. And whenever we're presented with like a new space, we try to create a new project within that space. So now that we're separated, we're trying to create a project where we can show our perspectives to the world in a way that's impactful.
Yeah. So one of the things that you've infected us with is, you know, one of the struggles we have in our research lab is how people with very different backgrounds collaborate together. So we're trying to get art historians to collaborate with computer science majors, with cognitive science majors, with, what are you majoring in? Yvonne here, who's doing is in technology, but he in performance studies, right? And so normally we talk about how difficult it is to get people who are very different to collaborate. Here, your problem is almost the opposite. Yeah. How do you get two people who are very similar to collaborate?
Yeah, and we're kind of trying, like the whole goal of this new project we're doing is by examining ourselves and by examining our own collaborative relationship, we want to enable people to understand themselves better. And one thing that we kind of noticed is, and something I included in the presentation was, I noticed in my life a lot of dysfunctional collaborative environments. And I feel that I can, you know, critically evaluate those environments and sort of bring in something that my twinness can teach me and bring something into that environment. And one of those things is just sort of getting around communicative barriers, because Jacob and I experience no communicative barriers. We can often read each other's thoughts, right? And we're always on the same page. And so we kind of want to try to reveal that relationship to people and show them that, you know, even if they are different, they have similarities.
Okay, so just listening to your narrative there, if there are any companies listening to this podcast, if you want to hire some consultants to teach collaboration, I encourage you to hire Jacob and Kason to bring a very different perspective on how to teach people to collaborate. Because normally consultants try and get people to collaborate who have different skills. In this case, you have very shared skills, so what do you have to teach people?
So I think no matter how different two people are, like, you're both, you know, people, right? So you have these innate similarities
things,
with people, right? So one of the...
We're all two-legged except people who have those, one or three.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That's exactly what I'm getting at. So a lot of times in, like, behavioral sciences, when these studies come out that are talking about the vast similarities between all the cultures of the world, they're kind of seen as, you know, upsetting dogmas and unsettling, like, long-held political beliefs. But I think that's a really important thing to do. So you need to really, like, examine, like, what is a person in order to be able to get them to work together, like better. Because if, you know, Kason and I have a lot of similarities, but I think everyone has similarities that they can connect to and use to be better at collaborating.
Okay, one of the metaphors, and I forget which one of you said it, so I just fell into an implicit bias that you look so similar that I've forgotten which one of you said it, was you use this concept of entanglement. And, you know, since I'm a physicist, astrophysicist, immediately you got my attention with that word. So what do you mean about entanglement?
So basically what we mean is, like, obviously with quantum entanglement, what happens is you can kind of introduce two particles together and they sort of like start mirroring the activity. And even if you go and separate them at a long distance, they tend to have some association with each other, even if, you know, the distance between them is a light year. And so basically how that reflects our story and how that is maybe a good name for our project is for 19 years, we were basically entangled.
One particle.
Yeah, we were one thing.
One particle, yeah.
We were working together and we were mirroring each other's activity. We were complementing each other's skill sets. And now
going to the same school.
Yeah, going to the same
playing
school.
Playing the same games.
Same parents, same everything.
Same parents.
Same meals. And so now that we're separated, there's still these, you know, there's still these similarities and we still tend to mirror each
so
other's activity.
Action at a distance.
Exactly.
Spooky action at a distance.
Spooky action at a distance, yeah.
And I think you gave a couple examples of that where you'll phone someone up and they were thinking the same thing.
Right. So whenever either of us is in kind of a funk, I would call it, we don't really know what decisions we want to make or where we want to go. Instead of like looking in the mirror and being self-reflective, I can kind of like call, you know, Kason and be like, hey, like, what are you doing? So I think, you know, in that way, we're kind of, you know, mirroring each other. And our togetherness at the beginning kind of created our individual personalities.
Yeah, and I'll talk about the example that you're referring to, which is when, so Jacob got a paid job, right? And of course, you were kind of competitive. As soon as he got a paid job, I said, well, now I need to get a paid job. Like, I'm falling behind. And so I went and secured a paid internship somewhere, and I immediately called Jacob up and I said, finally, I have a paid job. Like, I'm finally on the same terms as you. And he's like, really? That's interesting, because I felt like I was behind. And so those things, things like that tend to happen quite often, where we're kind of, you know, separate, but we're still sort of like functioning in our environments in a similar way.
Yeah, so the other thing where you caught my attention, the subject of intuition and gut feeling came up. So you're so similar that you tend to have the same intuition about a situation. So explain that a little bit more.
That's kind of hard to explain because this is the first time we're separate from each other, so we never really realized that. But now realizing it, we kind of, you know, you have to be in touch with your intuition, right? So when I'm not in touch with Kason, I feel like I'm not in touch with my intuition. So like, I basically have to call him and like talk to him to know, like, to validate what I'm thinking, right? So I think it's good to be in touch with like your gut feeling and your intuition, but to have it manifested as an entirely other person is very helpful. So I think people need it.
Do you want to add to that, or?
Yeah, I think what he's trying to say is basically like, you know, we struggle so much individually trying to find like our path or our calling, right? And we also want to like explore different pathways at the same time. And so we kind of struggle with like, oh, well, what am I supposed to be doing? Or, oh, what could I be doing with my skills and with my, you know, knowledge? And it's interesting for us because we can see, right, because we're so similar, we can actually see someone else pursuing another pathway, you know, applying their skills in a different setting. And we can say maybe, you know, maybe that's the path. Maybe I want to steer towards that path, or maybe I want to try that job out, right?
Yeah, so, the connection that I made is one of the things that we discussed in our lab is it possible to train your intuition? How do you train your gut feeling? And obviously, we do that by playing in the mud when we're kids. And so if both of you have had the same playing in the mud experiences, you're going to have very similar intuitions. Right, because you've experienced the same things you didn't understand, know, what happens when I throw a baseball with a spin on it or something? Well, until you do that, and so you probably both threw baseballs at the same time in your lives. So you have, you've both trained your intuition by your joint activity, which now, of course, is different because you're now getting intuition about things that the other brother doesn't have.
Yeah, so I think to kind of talk about that, our intuitions kind of like shaped our initial direction when we first got to college. And they both, it was, you know, they were weirdly similar. Jacob actually like kind of wrote this critical evaluation of, I think it was, what class was it?
So I wrote a critical evaluation of design two, and that basically landed the job I have now in the arts.
Right. So basically, you know, he had some thoughts and then he expressed those with writing and he was able to secure some position. And that's actually kind of exactly what happened to me. I, you know, wrote a story, like a journalist article, and then I submitted that to the newspaper, right? So I had thoughts, I had some feelings, and I expressed those with words on paper, and those kind of secured me a position as a writer at the newspaper. So like our intuition is that, I guess in that case was, you know, if we express our thoughts and if we put them out, you know, people will listen and people will kind of take our words and see our potential.
Okay, so at the same time, in our society, we focus everything on the individual. And so presumably you have a shared identity, but now you're trying to develop very separate identities. So that's a very different sort of situation. And one of the things you mentioned to me is most of the behavioral science studies on twins is what happens to twins who are separated at birth. And that there are very few studies on twins who spend their whole lives in the same house or something. Am I getting
that
right?
I just think that the separated twin stories are the ones people pay attention to.
Yeah.
So they kind of dominate the literature and the public perception of like of twin studies. So I just think that looking at how people who are really similar, for example, like us, for example, our environment, which is consists of each other, that shaped who we are because of we are around each other. And if you didn't know that fact, you can't really say much about twins who are separated. So I think there's like something to be learned by looking at the entire spectrum of twins from very similar and together to separated birth, something like that.
And really what we're doing is kind of investigating our shared identity and how that shaped us as people. Because for so long, we did have a shared identity. And another thing with people is like, you want to try to differentiate, right? Like when someone tells you that you're similar to a person, you want to like consciously make differences. And so that not only does that, you know, show itself in our appearances, like we have different haircuts, it also makes appearances in our like different behaviors.
Except you both part your hair on the same side of the head.
Well, that's not our, I mean,
that's genetic.
Yeah, literally can't control
that. I've tried. No, it's just your mother started that. Yeah, my head is parted on the woman's side of the head. That's what I was told in France. But my mother was the one who taught me how to comb my hair. And so she didn't think, oh, this is the woman's side of the head for the part. Anyway.
It's interesting because I can pinpoint a lot of my behaviors to whether it was just, you know, something I just did or something I consciously did to separate myself from Kaysen. So I think like one thing some people don't typically do is know why they do things essentially. But I think I have a strengthened sense of my like individuality because like I have my brother. So I can know whether or not some things were innate or some things I consciously chose to do.
And for example, like people think of me as like thoughtful and that. And also kind of like poised or like, I guess, kind of like calm. And that's because I remember Jacob having a temper when he was younger. And I thought, I don't want to look like that. I don't want to, you know, get really angry and kind of be uncontrolled. So like I consciously made a decision that I was going to be calm when I, you know, when I was angry.
Okay, so we're not going to have time to go to all these different ideas that have popped up in our discussions. As I mentioned to you, my wife is a twin, not an identical twin, but on the phone. I cannot tell them apart. But the story I wanted to tell, which kind of fits this idea about a different look at collaboration that you've sort of seeded in the discussions today, is if you look at all the literature on innovation and ideation is one of the local current buzzwords, what they tell you is when you think you have a good idea, go immediately to someone that can tell you that you're full of nonsense. Right. And so, you know, sometimes I'll have a good idea, and the first thing I do is mention it to my wife. She has absolutely no idea of the context. She says, "Roger, that's a stupid idea. Forget it." And I, you know, 9 times out of 10, I take her advice. Right. So I'm sure both of you have that kind of instinct. And so I told you this anecdote that Albert Einstein, as he was developing general theory of relativity and some of these really kind of strange ideas, he got into a habit with his best friend called Besso. They'd just go walking in Switzerland through the forest, and Einstein would be explaining the general theory of relativity, which hadn't been invented yet, to his best friend. And his best friend would just tell him, you know, "That's real nonsense. What are you talking about?" You know, I mean, and, you know, he basically got, you know, used his best friend as someone who had shared that discussion for 10 years. And before he tried it out on anyone else, I know my wife does that with her twin sister, and I'm sure both of you do that, is you use each other as test reactions to your idea.
And, yeah, like a reality check.
Yeah, and like kind of talking to that point, we do study like kind of different disciplines. So like I study a lot of like journalism and like
chemistry,
physical science. Yeah, chemistry. Yeah. And Jacob's very like a design thinker. So when I come up with something, like it's, you know, often he can provide a good enough kind of perspective to where he can just like say it's nonsense, right? Like we do appear very similar, and we have a lot of behaviors that are similar, but we also have specialized and created our own identities that enable us to kind of have that.
Okay, so unfortunately, we've run out of time, but hopefully this is going to be the beginning of some thinking aloud. Obviously, I get to interact with Jacob frequently in the lab setting. You know, one of the things that's so difficult when you're trying to argue with someone else is you don't understand their context. Now, you have the advantage that you have shared the context for so long, you know how to interpret what someone says. And often I will interpret something and I'll misinterpret it because I just don't understand the person's context. So twins that have a shared context will solve problems that people that don't have a shared context cannot. Okay? Thank you.